This is the Bigger Pockets Podcast, show 119.
Wow, there's other people that are doing this for a living. I can do this permanently. I can do this full time.
You're listening to Bigger Pockets Radio, simplifying real estate for investors large and small. If you're here looking to learn about real estate investing without all the hype, you're in the right place. Stay tuned and be sure to join the millions of others who have benefited from BiggerPockets.com. Your home for real estate investing online.
What's going on, everybody? This is Josh Dorkin, host of the Bigger Pockets Podcast, here with my co-host, Mr. Adam Levine.
Yeah, you know, that's me right there on the cover of Men's Fitness. Obviously you can't see this on, listening on your iPod or whatever you're listening on, but I'm holding up a picture of Adam Levine that was on the cover of Men's Fitness, and it looks identical, even the hair, identical to my host here, Josh Dorkin. Nice. Yeah, I'm thinking like when I come out to Denver next week, we should like have you put on a, you know, tank top like this and grow your beard out a little bit and do a Bigger Pockets magazine with you just like this.
You just want to see me with my shirt off, right? Freaking me out.
All right, how you doing other than that? What's up?
This is Brandon, by the way, my co-host.
Hi, I'm Brandon, Josh's co-host.
Hi, Brandon.
Hi, today's show is awesome.
It's a great
show.
And
I don't say that word often, but
this
one really is an awesome show.
It is a great show. And since you talked about you being in town, we are looking forward to you coming into town in 2 days.
Thank you.
But you know, when this airs, it'll have been like
I'll
a month
be back
or two
home
ago.
And
yeah. Anyway, yeah, things are good, man. All is well. February was another stellar month for Bigger Pockets. I mean, we are just churning at all cylinders, helping people left and right. The success stories that we keep hearing about are unbelievable. It makes everybody here on the team ecstatic. I mean, we really are really happy. And thank you to everybody who's a part of our world and for participating, engaging, for sharing Bigger Pockets and with your friends and family and circles. And anyway, I'm just really happy at how things are going.
Are you happy?
Happy.
All right. So anyway, today's show, we actually have a professional or an ex-professional sport player who played a certain
sport. Player?
Is that what you call it? I didn't want to give away what he did.
I'll strike you, Brandon.
Thank you.
A sport player.
Is that what you call it? Anyway,
an athlete?
Okay, fine. A professional athlete. That's much better.
Yeah, there you go.
He's going to talk about how he, you know, got started with real estate and all that. Really good stuff. But before we do, let's do today's quick tip.
Quick tip.
Today's quick tip is Bigger Pockets is currently hiring for a number of positions. If you guys want to work for Bigger Pockets, go to biggerpockets.com/jobs, especially if you're in the Denver area. But even if not, check it out, see what's available. And maybe you can get a world-class real estate education while working for a world-class real estate, I don't know, information.
Organization.
Sure.
There you go. Yeah, we're pretty much going to be hiring
forever,
ad infinitum. So, yep. Great. Awesome. Good quick tip. Very, very good.
Thank you.
Well, otherwise, man, we've got today's pro tip of the week. What is today's pro tip of the week, Brandon?
Today's pro tip of the week is you can actually, I've said this before, but you can watch replays of all of the weekly webinars that we've done at biggerpockets.com/pro-replay. biggerpockets.com/pro-replay. You can, check them out. We've done how to find, analyze, and finance a property, how to make $1 million in real estate, how to... what else do we do? The top five. We did a bunch of different things.
How to buy a small apartment.
How to quit your job.
Yeah.
Seven steps to get started. All this
and
stuff.
And more and more coming. And Obviously, you know, all of our webinars are free. You can go to biggerpockets.com/webinar and see what webinar is coming up. Yep. But to get the replay, you know, weeks, you know, any old archives and stuff, you do need a pro account. So check that out.
All right, good deal. Let's get on to the show. I think people are getting tired of hearing us talk about these pro sport players, and let's actually introduce our pro sport player.
All right, guys, today's guest is Graham Mink. Graham is living in beautiful rural Vermont.
Rural.
Yes, and Grant, he's done all sorts of really cool stuff. Landlord, he's done seller financing, he's tried developing, he's kind of tested the waters in lots of different ways and been successful in some and unsuccessful in others. And it's just fascinating to kind of hear a story. And we had a whole heck of a lot of fun just chatting and making fun of each other on the show. So it's definitely a blast.
You might think you want real estate, but that's not true. What you really want is passive income. With new investors struggling to find deals or get enough money to buy them and veteran landlords tired of the constant tenant phone calls, is there a better alternative? Actually, there is. Short notes from Connect Invest. Connect Invest is an online investing platform that allows you to easily participate in passive real estate investing, and all you need is $500 to start. Short Notes collectively funds a diversified portfolio of commercial and residential real estate projects across acquisition, construction, and development phases. You'll earn a fixed monthly income without the hassle of owning or managing real estate. Head to connectinvest.com/BP to create your account. Fund your digital wallet with at least $500. Select from 6, 12, and 24-month short notes with annualized return rates up to 9%. Then sit back and let your monthly returns roll in. Join today by visiting connectinvest.com/VP. Connectinvest.com/VP. What's better than low money down? No money down. Now through Rent to Retirement, you can buy a brand new construction turnkey rental property for no money down. Wait, hold on. This can't be right. I need to double check with Zach, Rent to Retirement CEO.
Oh, hey, Rob.
Zach, how the heck are you selling turnkey rental properties for $0 down?
It's not that complicated, Rob. Rent to Retirement has new construction properties up to $20,000 below retail prices. We also have investor loans with rates as low as 3.99% and down payment options as low as 5% or sometimes even zero money down. You get all the cash flow, appreciation, and equity for as little as zero money down. That's an infinite return.
Hold on, wait. Let me get on this before we tell it to the whole Bigger Pockets audience.
Just head to renttoretirement.com. That's renttoretirement.com or text REI to 33777. That's REI to 33777 to learn more about how you can get started investing with no money down today.
Get your next new construction property at a steep discount or invest with no money down. Head to renttoretirement.com today. If you're in the landlord game, then you know the importance of solid tenant screening. That's where Rent Ready steps in. Now, Rent Ready's got an important new feature, proof of income verification. And get this, with Plaid certified reports, you'll see everything from income summaries to total earnings by month. Say goodbye to those gut check moments and hello to confidence in renting with Rent Ready. Rent Ready is included in your pro membership at Bigger Pockets. If you're not a pro, they're offering a 6-month plan for $1. You can't beat that. I actually don't even know how they make money doing that, but it's above my pay grade, pal. Visit rentready.com. That's RENTREDI.com and use the code BP Investor. That's BP like Bigger Pockets, investor like me, to get 6 months of Rent Ready for $1, which is crazy.
So with that, why don't we bring him in and get this going? All right, Graham, welcome to the show, man. It's good to have you.
Thanks for having me, guys.
No, it's a privilege. It's an honor for us to have you today because I am a hockey fan. I played hockey in my basement growing up, all right? Mighty Ducks, greatest movie ever made. I mean, come on.
You just aged yourself.
You're getting older now, Brandon, you know?
I know. I'm no longer like a kid anymore. Now I'm like, I don't know, whatever. I'm old. 29. It's a rough age. How old are you guys?
You and my mom were both 29. Interesting how that is.
I will be 29 for the next like 40 years.
Yeah. 30 is a depressing birthday.
I'm not looking forward to July. That's all right.
I got a year till 40. So there you go.
Nice. Yeah. Nice. I'm 35. So I'm right in the middle of you guys.
Nice.
So.
Okay. Nice. You're still cool. An old guy. All right. Yeah.
Well, Graham, let me cut to this because Brandon can't get his act together here. You, sir, are an active real estate investor with kind of an interesting past. I'd say a little more interesting because we live in this culture of sports here in America and we love sports. And so you were a professional hockey player. Is that correct?
Yeah, for 13 years I played professional hockey, mostly in the American Hockey League, which would be the equivalent of like AAA. Okay. Baseball would be. So, you know, you're not making millions like the NHL guys are, but you know, you can make a good living there, and it was a good experience for me. And you know, I played 7 games in the NHL for the Washington Capitals over the course of 3 seasons when I was in my mid-20s, and you know, wasn't able to crack the lineup permanently, but I played with a lot of, you know, excellent NHL players, a lot of good, you know, American Hockey League players, and you know, very happy overall with my 13 years of professional hockey.
That's awesome. I think there's one question that everybody wants to know, and that is, did you ever get in any fights? You know, like gloves.
I have gotten in a few fights.
Okay, good.
Some of them are online, but don't judge me. Judge me by the fights.
We will be putting those in the show notes if we could find them.
That might affect my credibility as a real estate investor, but it's I don't invest in real estate like I play hockey. So that's
yeah. He's the guy that you want on your side.
Yeah,
that's funny.
We'll see.
That's awesome.
All right. Funny. Right before the show today, like we were doing something, you know, like getting the questions together, and I find that you have a Wikipedia page, and I want to complain for a second because you have a Wikipedia page, and Bigger Pockets does not have a Wikipedia page. Can you believe that, Josh?
You're trying to take away from Graham here a little bit, and we're not going to take away from Graham because Graham deserves a Wikipedia page. Also deserves a Wikipedia page. So if any of you listeners are Wikipedia editors or whatever they are, like you guys, man, let's get this thing up and running. Let's get the podcast. We got all sorts of, you know, I mean, we've had a ton of press. So, I mean, we've got enough to be in Wikipedia. So if any of you guys are editors, that'd be cool. But yeah.
No, shameless, yeah. Josh. Shameless.
Totally shameless and unplanned.
There's a lot of, you know, rabid hockey fans and a lot of great fans, especially in the minor leagues. You know, those people live and die for their hockey and they love their players and they're very supportive. And, I'm very appreciative and a lot of hockey players are to have those fans. Otherwise, there wouldn't be a job.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I don't know if you're willing to talk about this. I mean, you were not getting rich playing hockey. I mean, at the end of the day, you're kind of a working man type of guy. I mean, and so, you know, at some point there was this thing that checked in your brain that's like, hey, I got to do something else.
It's exactly how it went. I played professional hockey for 3 years and, you know, what got me into real estate investing was one morning in the summertime, I woke up and I was sick of being broke, not having anything. You know, everything I owned could fit in the back of a, you know, Blazer SUV. You know, I would go to hockey play, you know, we get paid over 6 months. So you get a full year's salary in 6 months. I was making, you know, $40,000 a year at the time. And, you know, you get all that money, you're 22 years old and, you know, by the time you get to September, you know, there's not a lot left over. So I got sick of doing that and wanted to start, you know, accumulating wealth. And I was in a different situation where, you know, I had another career that was super intensive for 6 months. And then for 6 months, I kind of could do what I want. So I can't go get a real job, right? No one's going to hire you for 6 months. And,
yeah,
you know, I was just really, really frustrated one day, and I was venting to my my father, who's an insurance agent in Stowe, and he said, you know, well, I've been looking at the paper, and there's this 3-unit building in the town next to ours. Why don't you go look at it? And since it was coming from my father, I immediately rejected the idea. I was like, nice. No, it's a terrible idea. I'm not doing that. And then I slept on it. And the next day, I thought about it, and I was like, sure, let's go look at it. And I knew nothing about real estate. No clue if this was a good deal or a bad deal. It was 2004, summer of 2004. So things were kind of picking up, and we went and looked at it.
Cool. So, and you said Stowe, that's Stowe, Vermont, correct?
Yep, Stowe, Vermont.
So you are our first guest from the great state of Granite State, isn't it? The Granite State of Vermont? Or is that New Hampshire?
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm not up on the history.
You're in the crack state over there, Brandon.
Yeah. We're in the Green Mountain State, Vermont.
Green Mountain State, yeah, whatever
yeah.
it is.
Yeah, it's close and we're very small. I mean, you talk about Podunk all the time and you know, Vermont, I mean, we have 680,000 people and there's greater metropolitan areas that have more than that. So
but there's a lot of wealth in the state. I mean, it's not a poor state by any means.
No, I mean we have a very strong tourist economy. It's a great state for tourism. I mean, people come up, we're close to Boston and New York City and, you know, Philadelphia's not that far away. It's a close drive. We love people to come up, spend their money and leave.
Nice. I love Vermont. It's beautiful, man. I spent a lot of time there as a kid skiing and just exploring with the fam. So yeah I love it.
If you haven't visited, you should, because it's a different place. It really is. It's very rural and there's a lot of room and it's comfortable. I enjoy living here and I've lived a lot of places.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So your dad tells you to go do something. You smack him around and finally you relent and go ahead and check out this property. Tell us about what happened then.
Well, we called the listing agent and we set up a showing. We went and looked at it and it was 3 units and it was located in Morrisville, Vermont, and which is the town next to Stowe. Stowe's a ski town. We've got, you know, it's the ski capital of the East. There's a, it's very expensive to live here. You know, houses are expensive, and rental property is the same. So went to Morrisville. The threeplex was listed for $165,000. Two of the units were rented. One wasn't. It wasn't on the, you know, there's no like real good areas and bad areas here. There's no like areas you need to avoid in Vermont. It's very rural and safe, and you know, everybody knows everybody, but there's nicer streets and there's not nicer streets. And this is one of the not nicer streets at the time anyway. And, you know, we ended up looking at it and I thought about it and looked at the numbers and I just said, sure, let's do it. So we made a full price offer and we bought it, which, you know, all those things I would never do today, but it worked out at the time.
Well, so the full price offer, $165K, what were the units renting for?
10 years ago. I think I was getting like $800 a month for a 3-bedroom and then $750 for a 2-bedroom. And then there was another 2-bedroom that I think was $750. So, you know, this wasn't, you know, I didn't know anything about anything. And I was just hoping to have a place to live in the summertime and then rent the other two units out, kind of like a quasi house hacking type situation. So it worked out well. And, you know, the best part, I bought it right in October, which is right when our season starts. So I had to leave town. So my dad was like, I'll find you a tenant. And which is another big mistake. The first and last tenant he ever found for me. But
good job, Dad.
Yeah, she lasted about 4 months, and I don't know. There wasn't a good tenant anyway. So I bought it.
Tell us why. Come on. I mean, we kid, but like, I mean, it would be interesting because this is a show that we really have our listeners here. We want to teach people, right? So
right.
What did your dad do wrong? Who, you know, I don't want their name, but like, what happened?
There was no screening, you know, it was just kind of put an ad in the paper and the first person that shows up and has a security deposit basically gets it. So that was the first mistake. And then, you know, there's no income verification, no background check, no credit checks, no, none of that stuff. So you're kind of just rolling the dice. And, you know, in my market anyway, you probably got 70-80% of the market are decent tenants, decent renters. And then you've got another 10% that are kind of on the fence. Then you got another 10% that are really bad people you don't want to rent to. So I think this was one of the people in that bottom 10%. And, you know, pretty much, you know, she moved in and then a boyfriend moved in who had a criminal past. And there was the cops were called a couple times. There was a door kicked in. The rent got paid for like 2 months. And then I don't know how my dad ended up getting her out because the eviction rules in Vermont are pretty strict, but he got her to leave. She left about January. She moved in October. And then when I was fixing up the apartment, when I got back, there was just like random guys stopping by all the time, like coming upstairs and like, hey, we're looking for so-and-so. So I don't know what she did for a living, but it wasn't good. So, thankfully, my other two tenants stuck with me. They were very good tenants. They had been there. I inherited them with the property, so it worked out well. So that was kind of a what not to do, but enabled me to move back in the springtime.
Do you remember how you financed it?
I bought it with – I know it cost $8,500 out of pocket.
Okay.
And I know
loans were different back then than they are today, so you don't have to know.
Oh, my God.
That.
Yeah. My second deal, woo!
We'll get to that one.
It was so easy to get money back then. It was ridiculous.
Yeah.
But I had $3,500 in my bank account. I borrowed $5,000 from my dad for a short-term loan because I was going to start getting paid again in October, and I paid him back, you know, quickly. But it was $8,500 down. It was it was like a 5% down payment. You know, I got the documents here somewhere.
That's all right.
I could look it up, but it's
go get them. Go get them right now. Stop what you're doing.
And so it was low money down. I was paying PMI and all that stuff, and the plan was to get a tenant in there and then to maybe refinance it the next summer. And so when I went to refinance it, I went to a normal bank and I was like, okay, I think I can refinance now. I want to drop this PMI. And they did an appraisal, and this was how crazy the market was at the time. But the appraisal came back at $235,000.
Whoa.
I bought it 8 months before for $165,000.
Wow.
That was like light bulb, like, wow, I made $70,000 in 8 months and I did nothing except, you know, deal with problem tenant. But the light went on my head, like, man, you can really make money with this stuff. And it was shocking. And, you know, the property wasn't worth $235,000. You know, the appraiser, whoever did it, and I don't know who it was, you know, the market was just going nuts at the time. So, yeah, possibly. So the banker, the mortgage broker that was like, hey, your appraisal came back at $235,000, you owe $165,000, we can refinance it at 80%, and then would you like a home equity line of credit? And I was like, what's that? And I was like, what's a home equity line of credit? And he's like, you can borrow up to, you know, 90% of the value in the property and, you know, explain the rates and the details and everything. And they're like, I was like, and we're going to give you another $50,000 that you can use basically however you want. And I was like, really? And they're like, yeah, sure, sign me up. So that worked well too. So, you know, but the lending climate at the time was just nuts. They didn't really care. I mean, I wasn't making a ton of money. And they're willing to just loan me up to 90% of value on this investment property. It was crazy.
Yeah, those are good times. So just to bring this to the modern world for our people listening today. So the loan was different back then. Well, you'll get what I'm saying. Josh is laughing at me. The loan may be different back then. You put $8,000 or whatever that you had to pay to get this thing. Today, the most common way to do that house hacking thing is usually through an FHA loan, which is 3.5% down payment. So if you're interested in that, just talk to your mortgage person. Most mortgage people can do an FHA loan. Again, yeah, 3.5% down, or even cooler is a 203K loan, which lets you wrap in the repair costs on a property into that loan with still 3.5% down on the whole thing. So anyway, I just wanted to let people know that's kind of a cool strategy that a lot of people use to house hack. So
and you can look those up on Bigger Pockets. If you want to get more information, just, you know, search for it, and there's plenty of stuff on it.
And there's an article I wrote a long time ago, and I'll link to it in the show notes, but it's called How to Hack Your Housing and Get Paid to Live for Free. And it just talks about that strategy. So anyway, all right. Do you still own this property, the triplex?
I do. I've owned it for 10 years. It's honestly like one of the best things I bought. It just really, it just chugged away. It's just slow and steady. And, you know, that was initially a buy and hold property that I still hold today. But my thought process at the time wasn't to be a buy and hold real estate investor. I didn't really get back to that for another, you know, 7 or 8 years. It took me to kind of figure out like, okay, this is how I'm going to make money in real estate. I wanted, you know, my next deal, I want to be a developer. I wanted to, you know, buy land, subdivide it, sell it. I wanted to, you know, I've got friends that are contractors. I thought about, you know, having build packages and working that aspect of it too. So it was a buy and hold, and it worked really well. It's still working great to this day. I'm glad I bought it. I wish I bought 10 more of them back then.
Yeah.
Rather than going doing the other stuff, trying to do the other things to make, I thought I could make more money in real estate doing other things. And I was, you know, unfortunately it didn't work out that way.
So I want to hear about all that stuff, and I want to get to that. We're going to press you and make you tell us all the details about all the bad stuff. I almost said a bad word. All the bad stuff that's happened. But what's that property worth now, approximately?
I had an appraisal done last year, and it was $205,000 is what the appraisal came back at. So,
and what are you getting on rents now?
I get $950 for the two bedrooms and $1,000 for the three bedroom.
Cool. That's great.
So it includes heat, which is a big thing up here because it's so cold,
okay,
especially this winter. So if I wasn't including heat, you know, each one would probably be $100 and $150 a month less to be market. But, you know, $900, $850 is about the market value for a two bedroom rental in Morrisville.
Okay. Okay, cool. So talk about, you know, it sounded like you had an idea that I'm going to go and do some active stuff, like maybe rehabbing or developing or more, you know, as we say, job type real estate investing versus the passive, more passive buy and hold strategy. So what happened? I mean, after this deal, you went and kind of explored things a little bit is what it sounds like.
Yeah. You know, I had $50,000 to do what I wanted with. I also had some money that I had saved up. And I looked around. I've been flying places for hockey and traveling, and the rest of the country doesn't operate the same way, you know, real estate development wise that Vermont does. Vermont's very slow developing. It's very, you know, you don't have like 200 house subdivisions that go up in Vermont. And when you're flying around and you're flying all of these subdivisions and you're seeing these houses and you're thinking, wow, that's great. I want to do that. I want to try that. You know, I want to bring that here. But, you know, Vermont likes being rural, it likes having slow development. It doesn't, you know, so because of that, it takes a long time to get through the permitting process to do that sort of thing. So I was looking for a house at the time, and this is when the market was the absolute craziest. You know, it was. I mean, stuff was selling in days on the market. There's multiple offers on everything. So I couldn't buy anything in Stowe. I couldn't buy anything in, you know, kind of within 20 minutes. So I ended up finding a house that had 27 acres with it in Hyde Park, which is like about 25, 30 minutes away from my house. And it was 2-acre zoning. So I was going to get, you know, I wanted to do 9 building lots and the house, keep the house on one lot, sell the house, and then, you know, divide the land, put a road in, put utilities in, power. And I did all that. But by the time I got through the permitting process, a 2-acre lot that I thought I was going to sell for $60,000, I couldn't give away for $30,000 at the time. So, I mean, it was, I still own, of the 8 lots, I still own 3 to this day. And I'm actively, you know, marketing them, trying to get them sold. But it's not easy when the, you know, land, the bottom fell out of land before the whole thing. And especially in a rural area, it just was a, you know, poor location. It was a poor decision at the time. But, you know, it didn't sink me. You know, I was lucky that I had another job to bail me out, kind of, and not have to get foreclosed on or file bankruptcy. And once I do sell the lots, I'll come pretty close to breaking even. I'm probably going to lose, you know, maybe 10 or 15,000 if, you know, once I get them all sold. But it was a learning experience for me. And certainly the timing of the market didn't help. If I'd started 2 or 3 years earlier, I probably would have nailed it and been fine. But I just, the bottom fell out of the market, and a lot of people were kind of left holding holding cards that they didn't want to have. And,
yeah.
You know, for me, it was my second deal. I managed to sell the house, which was big. And, you know, I was able to kind of get through it, and I did. So it was lucky.
Wow. Well, so you know, that's, it seems like a fairly big project for a second deal for a guy who's doesn't have a ton of experience. What would you have done differently looking back? You know, if you could have done it completely differently, knowing what you know now, what might you have done?
Well, if I could really redo it, I wouldn't have bought the house to begin with. I mean, I bought this house for $315,000. I used one of those no doc, like signature loans, basically. I bought it with like $15,000 down. I mean, I was really exposing myself. But again, I thought I was going to make $100,000 or $200,000 in a span of 2 or 3 years, and I wasn't going to have to worry about it. But and unfortunately, you know, stuff hit the fan. I wouldn't do it again if I could really go back. But if I say I bought the property, from a development perspective, there's easier ways to go about getting quicker through the permitting process that I know of now that I didn't know back then, where I could have, like, you know, took a 2-acre chunk and sold that instead of trying to do 8 units all at once. I could have done 2 acres at a time and did it a lot quicker. And so that's another, you know, kind of learning thing. And it was very ambitious. I was 24 years old at the time. I mean, you make decisions when you're younger and you're more aggressive. And,
yeah.
You know, I wouldn't do that now, but yeah. You know, that's the way it went. I made a mistake, and you got to live with that. But, it was a learning experience. You know, ultimately it forced me to learn so much more about real estate, and it was a lot cheaper than a college education is. So I kind of look at it that way, that this was my education. You know, I didn't go spend, you know, $20,000 on a boot camp or a seminar or something.
Come
like
on,
that.
Why not?
Well, I was too cheap. You know, I was like, I'm not going to spend that much money. I can't do that. But I did have all the books. I don't know if you guys have ever heard of Dolph DeRoos. You ever heard of that name? It was like this Australian guy. He was like a real estate investor. I mean, yeah. This is like 10 years ago. And I listened to like his books and stuff. And that was like what gave me the motivation to go out and do these things. But
nice.
Yeah.
Well, cool. Okay. Well, let's move on and talk about, you know, so, you know, actually before we do, I have a question on the development thing. First of all, you said you bought the whole property itself. You were to subdivide it out and sell the lots out, or you're going to build on each lot and sell the house with the lot?
Yeah, I bought the house on 27 acres, and I ended up getting 8 building lots. One of them had the existing house on it. So I sold the existing house, and then I was going to sell the land for other people to purchase and build their own houses on. Or maybe I thought it was going to go so fast that I wasn't going to really have to worry about building, but I did offer build packages and things like that too. But, you know, people could, once the market crashed, people could buy existing houses for so cheap. Why are they going to go build something? It made no economic sense. So it was like, great. Now what do I do? So.
Yeah. Yeah. It makes sense. I asked that just because, I mean, that's kind of something I would like to maybe get into someday, is the idea of buying a big property, subdividing it, and then actually building all the houses on it, or doing, like you said, you know, like offer the build packages or whatever. But the thing I've noticed with that is the people who seem to make a lot of money in that. I've been doing a lot of research the last few days on like real estate market, like what is the real estate market and how the cycles work, just for a blog post that's coming up and will probably be out by this time. But anyway, in that process, like I looked at the people that seem to survive the best at that game are the ones who get in while the market, you know, is still like on the upcline. But once it gets too close to the top, those are the same people that are left holding the bag when the market drops. Then, you know, it's just, I mean, the real estate market is like this, you know, cycle. Yeah. And so, I mean, it can be a fantastic way to make money in real estate. But at the end of the day, it all just comes down to timing. And that's why we give it the name like speculation, or those people are speculating a little bit. I'm not saying it's a bad thing, but just something people should be aware of is you're not guaranteed to make a profit off that, like your story showed.
So. No, I mean, I got lucky that I did get bailed out and that I could have a job to put money into that. And, you know, it was really, I had it under a fixed rate long-term loan, and it was costing me like $500 a month or whatever. It was like, that was like my car payment. You know, yeah. I was like, I'm not going to get a new car until I sell all this stuff. And so I'm driving like a POS truck around. And it's like, you're a professional hockey player. How come you're not driving something nice? It's like, well, I'm punishing myself for making a business decision. So
I did the same thing for years.
Right.
That's funny. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, we've got the buy and hold, the triplex. We've got this development deal. What'd you end up popping into next?
Well, I met my wife. Actually, met her in 2004. I remember calling her and being like, "I just bought a triplex."
What day did you meet her?
What day did I meet her?
Yeah, he's quizzing you here.
I don't know.
I don't remember the date I met.
It's not important.
I don't remember the date I met.
I met mine, by the way.
Wow.
That was because it was Christmas, because you were sitting at a bar, because you didn't want to go to, because you're Jewish.
Well, there you go.
That's what you do on Christmas.
Right. That's true.
I don't know. That's true. I guess. Okay.
Yeah. So
I got put on the spot the other day by her. It was like, I didn't know the day I proposed. And like, apparently we're supposed to know that date.
I mean, if I could keep the anniversary date straight, I think I'm doing pretty good. I mean,
I said.
I think that's good, but I'm not a woman. I'm not a woman. So. Birthdays are important. Valentine's Day is important. Yeah. You know, these are the things I put them in my planner on my phone, and I try not to forget, but
nice.
The day that we actually met, I don't know.
I'm just giving you grief, man. That's all.
Yeah.
All right. That's okay. So what else have you done? I mean, what came after that? You said you met your wife.
We bought a house. We bought a single family house.
So you're no longer house hacking.
Well, it was a quasi, because I still was on the development thing, and this house was located in town. It was in terrible shape. It hadn't been touched since the 60s or 70s, but it had 1.5 acres with it. And in the town, you could put 9 more units on that lot. So I thought, okay, I'm gonna chop a 1 acre lot off, and I'm gonna build, you know, 8 townhouses there and rent them out. So, but we were gonna live in the house in the summertime. So then I was like, okay, I'm gonna fix and flip this house, and you know, this will be good. And so I got into the renovation part of the house, and it ended up, you know, costing, you know, quite a bit of money, but a little bit more. But we fixed it up because we knew we were going to live there for the next 4 or 5 years, you know, at least in the summertime to get the money out of it. So it wasn't really strictly just to make money. You know, I wish, again, I knew about Bigger Pockets at this time, and Jay Scott was on there, and I could have read his books and done the numbers better, because I wouldn't have paid as much as I did for the place. But I ultimately did subdivide that. I fixed up the house, and then I subdivided the land off, and I sold that to a friend of mine who is a builder, and he built 8 units on there, and he's renting them. And what I figured was, I was going to make almost the same amount of money by selling it to him as I would building them myself, and have a lot less risk. And he could build it so much cheaper because he could build it himself. So it was kind of a win-win, and he's a good friend of mine. So that worked out, and we still own that house today. It works out really well as a single family rental. You know, we're getting $1,300 a month in rent, and you know, our expenses are like $900 a month. So it works out well as a single family home rental.
Okay. How did you determine how much to sell that acre off to your friend for?
Well, I looked at what I could make with it on. I mean, you look, there's not really a lot of comps. You know, Vermont is notoriously difficult for finding comps. Just so rural, there's no sales, there's no volume. There's no, and it's not really cookie cutter. Everything's kind of different. You've got mobile homes next to $1 million houses. You know, the $1 million house is on 20 or 30 acres, but you know, it's just different up here. So I looked at what, you know, we kind of did a price per unit thing. I was like, okay, like initially it was like, you know, 20,000 per unit. And then it was, you know, the market, this was 2007. So things were still on the way down. So by the time we talked about the deal and then agreed. And then by the time it got to the point to pull the trigger, you know, he asked if we could reevaluate, and I did, and we did. So the price kind of adjusted down on a per unit basis. And it was really what he could feel comfortable building everything for and still being able to, you know, have positive cash flow and make money on his end of things. So it was kind of, we looked at it, or he looked at it from his perspective of what he needs it to be. And then I decided if I could live with it or not. So, and we kind of worked backwards in that sense. And again, this was, would I do something like this again? You know, possibly if it was the right situation. But I, you know, my focus has really shifted from what I was doing back then to what I'm doing now, just because I want to be safer. You know, I want to be smarter about things and not take as much risk. If I didn't sell that land, you know, I could have gotten in trouble. So,
hey Graham, really quick, what does it cost? And then I want to hear about obviously what you're doing now, but what does it cost to subdivide a piece of property? So you've got this 2-acre parcel, you know, in terms of, you know, obviously he's paying you money, but you got to go and you got to do all sorts of stuff to actually do the subdivision, correct?
Right. The first, it depends on the town and it depends on where the property is located. And one of the things that I focus on in my investing is learning the rules and then finding the property, you know, that fits what you want to do, not the other way around. I think a lot of people get in trouble with permitting and with investing when they like, I want to own a 10 unit building. And so they buy someplace and they think they're going to add a bunch of units, but the zoning won't allow for that. So then they go to the board, they try to get variances, they try to get permission to do something that's not allowed, that the community doesn't want there. And it's this huge fight and it's this big expense. So I work backwards where I look at the rules that each town has, the zoning maps, where that house fits in the bigger scheme of things. And what do I want to do? Okay. I want to put up a 4-unit building. Okay. Well, let me find a piece of land that's in an area where the town's going to allow that. And it's a lot cheaper if you do it that way. You're not fighting city hall, so to speak. So if you're doing that and you're doing your homework and, you know, trying to work with the community rather than against it, I think, you know, you've got to hire an engineer first is the first thing to kind of do a survey map. And that costs about $2,500 to do the map. And then they've got to design your wastewater, you know, how you're going to hook up to the town lines and your water lines. And that's probably another $2,500. So you're kind of in for $5,000 for an engineer. And then you fill out your applications, you go to the town, that's a few hundred dollars. If I represent myself when I'm speaking to the board, then it's free. But if you have to hire somebody, you know, engineer will charge himself out at $95 an hour to kind of present your plan to the board. And then you've got to put the infrastructure in. You've got to file the plats. You got to make the map. So to subdivide a thing, like for that property, I probably had about $12,000 or $15,000 into the paperwork process, engineering to get it as a saleable lot to somebody else.
Okay. And then I'm assuming your friend that you sold it to, he's the one that went and put in like the water, the sewer, like all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. I had to get the permitting for it, which it wasn't, you know, it's not easy. You've got to get the state to do it, and state's a big bureaucracy, so it's not always straightforward. But yeah, he put all that stuff in and he installed that, and he used his whatever from that point. He took it and ran with it.
Okay.
Gotcha.
Cool.
Gotcha. Cool. Yeah. Thanks for sharing that. I think that's really helpful for folks.
Yeah. We probably should do more with development and chat with more developers on the show, because I don't know. It's a cool strategy.
Just talk with them when it's on the way up. That one.
Yes.
There you go. We're always looking for ways to improve, searching for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for better is by matching with quality candidates. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of the show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BiggerPockets. Just go to Indeed.com/BiggerPockets right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Indeed.com/BiggerPockets. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Whether you need to buy or sell, or you're just obsessed with looking at homes for sale, Redfin's got you covered. Redfin updates their listings every 2 minutes to help you see new homes first. And they give you personalized recommendations based on the homes you like, so you can find a home that's just right for you, whether that's a cabin, a craftsman, or a castle. With the top-rated Redfin app, you can favorite homes, share listings with others, and schedule tours even on the same day with a local Redfin agent who can help guide you through the whole home buying process. And if you're looking to sell, Redfin agents have the experience to help you get the best price possible for your home. That's because they sell twice as many homes as other agents. With a listing fee as low as 1%, Redfin's fees are half of what others often charge, which means you'll have more money to put towards what matters most to you, like your next home. In fact, last year, Redfin saved home sellers $127 million. No matter where you are in your real estate journey, Redfin can help. Download the Redfin app to get started today. Listeners, I'm telling you right now, it's not every day you find a game changer like Rent Ready. They're not stopping with just tenant screening. They've rolled out proof of income verification. Let Rent Ready handle the heavy lifting with automatic checks on financial stability and earnings. Plus, with Plaid certified reports, you'll have all the info you need right at your fingertips. Rent Ready is included in your pro membership at BiggerPockets. And if you're not a pro, they're offering the 6-month plan for just $1. How great of a deal is that? That's 1/8 of a Chipotle. That's pretty good. Visit rentready.com. That's rentredi.com and use the code BP Investor. That's BP, like Bigger Pockets, Investor, to get 6 months of Rent Ready for $1. Passive income without the property headache? It's possible. There's a way to invest passively in real estate and get monthly income without any tenants, maintenance, or property management. The Wealthy have been doing this for years, and if you're an accredited or high net worth investor, you too can collect cash flow without the headaches that come from owning rentals. How? By investing in a private real estate fund with PPR Capital Management. PPR's co-founder, Dave Van Horn, wrote the book on real estate note investing for BP. But he's not just investing in notes. Dave and his team also have an extensive background in commercial real estate. And with PPR Capital Management, they're strategically investing in both notes and commercial real estate nationwide. With over $500 million in assets under management, PPR has provided individuals with a steady source of truly passive income since 2007 without ever missing a payment. Check them out at investwithppr.com. Again, if you're looking to get monthly passive income from an experienced team with a strong track record, go to investwithppr.com today.
There you go. All right. So you said you did, after that you changed your strategy in the beginning. Now you're a little bit more secure. So what is it? What are you doing today? What's your main strategy in real estate?
Well, kind of the biggest thing was I found Bigger Pockets. I mean, nice. It really did. It really changed my thinking. First of all, it was great in a sense that there was an industry out there. What I was doing back then, I never really could even classify as like real estate investing. I was just working in real estate, So when I found Bigger Pockets, it was like, wow, there's other people that are doing this for a living. I can do this permanently. I can do this full time. I can, and I've got people that'll answer questions, It's like, who do you ask if you're trying to figure out, something to do with a development, no one does that type of stuff. So when I found Bigger Pockets, I was like, oh my God, look at all this information that's here. It's all free. Look at these people that are found success and they've made failures and that I can learn from. It was really like a watershed moment in my investing career, in my life as it pertains to real estate investing, because, a lot of the stuff that I was doing I learned from Bigger Pockets was on there. So it was confirmation that I was on the right path, that I could do it. And then, you know, and that was probably 60, 70% of what I knew. And then there was this other 30% was like, wow, I never thought of that. You know, this person did this and I might've learned it if I was in this for another 10 or 15 years on my own, but it just, it shortened my learning curve so much. And it just put me on this steep learning curve to just, I mean, for like when I discovered it, which was about a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, maybe, I just read and read and read and read. I just was on the site, just stalking and learning and being and fine tuning and like, Yeah, I was a creeper. I was a stalker. And it changed my perspective. And I was, and then I looked back at what I had done and I thought, God, the first thing I did was the right thing to do. And, you know, maybe not everything I did was right, but this buy and hold strategy, it works for my market. I liked doing it. I like being property manager. I like being a landlord. I like that people aspect of the thing. I'm not going to like it forever, but for now it's good. So I changed my focus away from the development stuff. That was going to be my primary thing, was the development. But now my primary thing is trying to get enough of these, you know, little oil wells, like, you know, Karen Rittenhouse, I think, was the one who referred to them as oil wells in like show two or something. And, you know, just pump out, you know, slow and steady kind of wins the race. And that's really what changed my focus. And at the time when I discovered it, I had like I had a commercial building, which is the best thing I ever bought that I was working with. And I ended up selling that this past summer. And then I was like, okay, this is like my ground zero. I can really focus on just acquiring small multifamily residential rental properties, which are, you know, solid as they can be, and go from there. And that's really what I've focused on the last 8 months, since I retired from playing professional hockey.
Wow.
Nice.
Cool.
Nice.
So tell me about that. I mean, like you said, you've been focusing on now the small multifamily properties, little oil wells, as you call them. Can you kind of maybe give us an example or two of like, what are some of the properties you've bought and how do you finance them?
Well, owner financing, which I knew was out there, but was like kind of this, like, how do you get somebody to, you know, to finance something, you know, but through Bigger Pockets, you know, learning how it worked, you know, talking with people, asking questions, it really like, it was like, okay, this is doable. I can do this. So, I bought a 3-unit building when I first got back in May. I was in Austria last year for hockey. So I knew I was going to retire and I was going to, the gloves were going to be off, and that's a hockey term, I guess, but nice. I was going to really get into real estate investing full time at that point. I wanted to make a go of it. I wanted to see this. I want to be my job after hockey. You know, I didn't have millions of dollars laying around where I could just not do anything, you know, unfortunately. But so I negotiated this deal. I bought 3 units in a town about 40 minutes away. I got them for $95,000 and he owner financed it. So I gave him a $20,000 down payment and he owner financed the rest. And then I had to, basically these apartments hadn't been touched again in 30 or 40 years. So I did all the renovations. I had, you know, hired subcontractors and, you know, fixed the place up, but not in the sense that I was going to flip it and sell it, but I was going to rent it and hold it as a long-term rental property. So that's what I did. And, you know, I put about, you know, 75 or 80,000 into fixing up the 3 units, and now they're rented, and I'm in the process of refinancing it to pull my money out and do it again.
That's awesome.
So,
I love it.
Yeah, it's great. Yeah. So how did you find it? So, you know, that I think that's the question that the average guy probably wants to know. Like, oh, that sounds great. But like, how on earth do you go about finding a property that somebody wants to sell or finance?
I get that question every single day in my email, right? You do too, I'm sure. Like, we get that all the time. How do you find seller finance deals?
So answer the question, Graham, for crying out loud. I've asked you 100 times.
One of the things we skipped over before, I got my real estate license in 2006.
Okay.
And mainly because I couldn't find a real estate agent that had any clue what I wanted to do or was talking. So I was like, I just got to study and get my license. And I did. So I'm still a realtor to this day, but I don't really buy and sell for other people. It's just for my own personal use. So I have access to the MLS, which in Vermont is pretty important because most 99% of the stuff is on the MLS. So I look for properties that have been on the market for a long time. And in Vermont, like, stuff can sit on the market for years in Vermont. I mean, it's it's slower. Things don't move in 90 days here. You know, I think the average time of market's like 6 to 8 months right now. And that's if it's priced appropriately. So things just move a little bit slower. So, so I look at a lot of properties, and I scour within 2 hours radius of my house. Every day I get an email that tells me everything that came on the market. And, you know, once a week I'm on the MLS for an hour or two looking for deals. And so I found this one in Plainfield, Vermont, and it's outside of Montpelier, and Montpelier is the capital, but it's like the smallest capital in the world. And, I think it's like 12,000 people that live there or something.
Wow.
But the government's there and there's jobs. And so this is about 10 minutes away, which, you know, is kind of my target area. And, I talked to the real estate agent and was kicking it around. And this, you know, this guy, he was an older gentleman. He'd been owning the property for 25 years. He didn't have a mortgage. So that's very important. If you're looking for somebody that wants to own, or you want to find owner financing, you need to find out if they have a mortgage or not. And you go to the town records, the town, at least where I'm from, you go to, you know, Plainfield town offices, and you go through the, there's either a computer there or you know, you can talk to the town clerk. They're very nice people generally, and they'll help you, you know, look up the deed information, and they'll tell you if there's a mortgage on the property or if the mortgage has been discharged and paid off. So you gotta, if you want owner financing, you gotta find somebody that doesn't have a mortgage, usually.
Yeah.
There is subject to and things like that. I haven't gone down that path yet. I may in the future, but and then you know, it's kind of tired landlords, people that have been doing it for a long time. They've owned it for 20, 30 years. They just want to get out. They're ready to retire. You know, one woman I moved south. She just wanted to, you know, not deal with the property anymore. So
that's cool.
Yeah.
I mean, and, not cool for her, but cool for you.
Yeah.
And there's no both of us.
Yeah, it does.
It sounds like there's no quick and easy way that you're using to find these deals, though. I mean, you're scouring, looking for deals. You're not doing any kind of like easy filter.
There isn't an easy way. At least I don't know of it yet.
And that's why today we're introducing the new Bigger Pockets 997 leads
filter
on your
machine.
Doorstep.
Yeah. Unlimited finance deals in your backyard.
10,000 owner finance
exactly
properties a day. So, yeah. No, it's people skills. It's learning. You know, when I got that was my first. Well, that wasn't my first owner finance deal, but you got to ask, number one, like, yep, will this person owner finance? And, you know, it doesn't work to just come right out and do it. You've got to work, you know, the relationship a little bit. You got to build a relationship. You got to build a little trust. You got to talk to the agent. You got to tell them, this is what I'm looking to do. I'm not going to rip this person off. I'm legit. I'm for real. And then the person has to be in the situation where they don't need the money right away. You're not going to, you know, it's going to be difficult to buy somebody's owner occupied house that wants to go buy another owner occupied house because they need the dough, they need the money. So you've got to find someone that, you know, would like to keep getting the passive income that they've gotten for the previous 20 years, but not do any of the work, which is what the owner financing really is. And then, you know, you sell the interest. You say, look, you're going to make 5-6% interest on this money rather than just sitting in the bank at, you know, 0.25% in your savings account. So yeah, that's really kind of how it's gone for me.
You know, I love the idea of seller financing. You know, there's a chapter in the book on investing with no and low money down that's all in seller financing because of this. Like, I think seller financing is probably one of the best over the next 10 or 15 years. And here's why. Because all these baby boomers, oh, Josh, just hold my book up. Look at that. I didn't have to do it myself.
You're still in my thunder. This book might come up later in the podcast. I don't know.
Okay, I hope so.
Nice.
So, here's the truth. Or here's my theory anyway, right? So the baby boomers, this generation of older Americans who are what today between 50 and 60 years old or whatever. I don't know the exact age for baby boomers.
Older. Is it older?
Okay, 50 to 70, whatever. Like the idea, like my parents' generation, they bought these properties over the last 30, 40 years. They now own them free and clear. When I was doing research for the book, I figured out that 30% of all homes in America are owned free and clear with no mortgage. 30%. Yeah. Shocking when I read that.
It was shocking.
Shocking. And so like.
Shocking.
Yeah. So people are like, well, I don't know where to find.
Crazy. This is unbelievable.
Simmer down, Josh. Simmer down.
Can you get a thought going?
No. So seller financing, like opportunities are everywhere. And especially with what I think small multifamily properties or even medium-sized multifamily properties because you got these older people. I mean, that's how I got my apartment complex, right? Older baby boomer generation. They like the income. They've been managing for 30 years their own property. They don't want to suddenly drop that, pay taxes on it, and then go and throw the whatever they have left in the stock market to, you know, try to supply for their future. They would much rather have the property that they've owned for 20 or 30 years give them their retirement for the next 20 or 30 years. So I am a huge, I almost don't like saying that on the podcast because I don't want everybody else in America to like, oh, take that and run with it and leave me no me deals.
You got a big ego there, Brandon.
We got a big show here.
Everybody in America is listening to
we
the
got,
show.
We have six
listeners.
That's 6 million, maybe.
Yeah, we're going for 6 million. So
no, we got more than that.
So I'm a huge fan of seller finance because of the generation that's retiring, but they don't want to stick their money into the thing. So anyway, I think that's awesome. Seller financing, you're using that. I want to get back to you now since this is your show. Graham, I mean, maybe can you kind of share, like, what should somebody who's just starting out, doesn't have any experience, they want to get seller financing on one of their deals, what should they do?
They need to learn about real estate as much as they can. For me, like, getting my real estate license was helpful. I mean, you see beginners and people like, where do I start? And it's going to be difficult for you to just find a seller financing deal and to get someone to trust that you're going to pay them back. If you don't have, you know, if you don't present yourself well and you don't have a track record, I think it is going to be difficult. So I'm not going to like sugarcoat it and be like, oh, these are out here everywhere. You know, if some, you know, younger person, some whippersnapper comes to me and is like, give me your house and I'll rent it out and I'll pay you for sure. You know, totally. And I'd be like, no, I'm not going to do that. So you need to be educated. You need to learn. You need to, and that's what, you know, one thing Bigger Pockets is good for, and read the books that people recommend on Bigger Pockets. That's what has helped me is it's opened up, you know, and it'll save you time and you'll get starting to think about this. But, you know, your book, Brandon, lays it out pretty well that, you know, to get started, you should be looking at these like low money down, government backed loans, house hack, get in there. You know, you're young, you've got time. That's the biggest thing. Or, you know, if you're not young, you still have the advantage of being able to qualify for a 3.5% down loan. For a new person to find seller financing, it can definitely happen, but you're going to have to be a, you know, pretty good, you know, salesperson. I think you're going to have to get lucky. And then, you know, you're going to have to do a good job with it too. It's not like it's just getting, you don't want to buy a crappy deal if it's just because it's seller financed. You know, it's like whether you're paying the bank or paying the previous owner, like if you're not making money, you're not making money.
I love that. Hey,
so Graham, can a typical, you know, if there's somebody listening and they're like, well, I don't know, you know, about the county recorder or this or that. I mean, can I just ask my agent and can they tell me if there's a loan on the property or is the average agent not going to know that?
Yeah, I mean, if it's listed with a real estate agent, they should know that information. And if they don't, then they can find it out. I don't think that's out of line. I mean, you might not even want to waste your time getting to the point of talking to the agent. If you're really looking for a seller finance deal, like go, you know, when I hear of a property comes on the market that I'm interested in, I go, you know, I go down to my town clerks and there's a computer there and I sit in and I type the address in and it shows me the deed and when they bought it. And, you know, the mortgage is in there sometimes. So it shows me how much they borrowed to buy it. So maybe what they're thinking that they want to get for it. If it's not listed with a price, on the MLS. And then if the mortgage has been discharged or not, you know, I know that. And then when I go to call the person to see, then, you know, I'm already know that it's potential. So then it's a matter of building the trust and building the relationship with the person before asking, you know, it's not like you go out on a date and you're like, you want to marry me the first day, you know, it's not the way it should be done.
It took me a solid year to get that seller finance apartment complex deal that I did.
Hold on, guys. No, seriously. What? I mean, like, this sounds like a lot of work. Yeah. And I mean, like, why? I mean, shouldn't the money just be handed to me? I mean, why do I have to actually work to do all this stuff? That's crazy.
Yeah, it's.
I don't work. I make my wife work. I just sit on Bigger Pockets all day. Yeah. She makes us money.
I make a point. My point, obviously.
Yeah, so. No, absolutely.
This is
it,
not.
It is. It's work. And especially when you're getting started, you know, and it's said all the time on Bigger Pockets, if you don't have money, if you don't have, you know, you got time and you got work and you got yourself. So you're going to have to put the time in to learn this stuff. It's like anything. And then, you know, the best part is once you get the ball rolling and it starts going, then you're going to find you'll have the time, because the nature of the business enables you to make money.
Well, one thing you said also, just to, I had never really thought about this before, but you know, in gaining credibility to be able to pull off a seller finance deal or even a partnership or private lending, right? It's all kind of the same. You got to have that credibility and trust. One thing that you did, that made a huge difference, I think, was, or at least it sounds like it, was getting your real estate license, right? So we all know that's good for the tools and stuff, but all of a sudden when you're talking with a seller and you're like, oh yeah, I'm a licensed agent, your credibility just goes through the roof with them, because all of a sudden, oh, that guy's licensed. You know, like right. That doesn't mean anything hardly, other than the fact that you took a 90-hour class or whatever. But in their eyes, like a licensed agent has a ton more credibility than somebody who's just, you know, coming off the street. So if somebody's out there listening to this and they want to know how to build some credibility and they don't have any deals under their belt yet, that is one of the best reasons to get your license.
Right. Right. I mean, it's like, it's the same as like finding a mentor or something like that. Get in real estate somehow, work for a property management company, get your license, find a mentor, you know, scrub toilets if you have to. Like if you're going to be learning about real estate and figuring it out, and you'll pick it up. I mean, most, if you're that motivated, you're obviously going to be an intelligent person. You're going to absorb the knowledge and the information, and you're going to, your path will start to show itself to you.
Yeah, I love that. I mean, people oftentimes, they hear people on the podcast, or like they hear my story, your story, Josh's story, whatever, and we're like, you know, oh, I want to do that deal that they just did. I want to get a seller financed, you know, property right now or whatever. They don't realize that we did scrub toilets, or at least I, you know, like I spent evenings cleaning out, you know, nasty
Speak
units.
For yourself, dude.
Okay, yeah, well, I spent a lot of time.
I don't
time
even scrub my own toilet.
I don't do those things anymore. And so people think that they can just jump in at our, like the level we're at today, without having to go through all that. And maybe it's possible, but you know, I don't think so. I think that early stage of the hard work and the hustle actually means something. So.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, walk before you run, right? I mean,
yeah. If you got it, I mean, if you're lucky and, you know, Brandon, you wrote an article about, you know, play your advantage. You know, everyone's got some kind of advantage, and that really struck home with me. It's like, don't, number one, like, don't feel guilty that you have an advantage, because everybody's got some kind of advantage. So if your advantage is you're young and you're inexperienced, you know, don't look at it as a negative. Look at it as a positive. Like, I got time. I can spend 3 or 4 years learning this stuff. And, you know, if you don't buy your first deal till you're 30 years old, you're still so much further ahead of the person, the wage slave that's just 9 to 5 till they're 65 years old and hoping their 401k is enough to make it through retirement. Like, if you start at 30, you still got 35 years until, you know, you really need that passive income.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Makes sense.
That was one of my favorite articles I've ever written, and nobody's ever brought that up on the show before. Well, I'm thanking you. So thank you.
We talked about it on the show.
Have we? I don't know. Yeah. I like that article. Okay. Yeah, I'm going to link to that
show once in a while.
It's a good article.
Thank you. I'm going to link to that in the show notes so I can brag about it more. I thought that was good.
Hey, Graham, back in 12, you did a big old commercial building, this 10,000 square foot building. Could we talk about that really quick, and then we're going to move on to the segment?
Yes, it was a owner finance deal. And what happened was, I'll try to be brief. I had another house that I was going to buy, and I had it under contract. It was a foreclosure. My attorney came back and said, there's a problem with the title. You're probably not going to be able to sell it right away. You shouldn't buy it. And I was like on the fence, should I buy it? And I ended up not buying it. And then the next, like a week later, I went and looked at this commercial building, and that ended up happening. So that was very lucky. You know, when you see an opportunity that you lose, it opens a door for something else. So that was the start of that deal. But then I went and looked at this building. It was listed at $150,000. It was in downtown Morrisville, which was in the middle of the beginning stages of a revitalization process. They had brought in some community planners, the people, the zoning administrator, like the government really was pro business and pro development, and they were going to get this downtown going. And I kind of recognized that back then. So I was like, I'll take a shot on this commercial property. It had a couple tenants in it. I made an offer of, it's funny because my offer was owner financing, and it was $110,000, and the seller took that as opposed to a full price cash offer because he was a Canadian citizen, and I found out later that he was not well, and he was going to lose most of what he sold the property for to taxes for some reason. So he had some tax advantage to that. So, you know, if you're thinking about an offer, you know, throw it out there because you never know what's going to happen. But yeah. So he accepted that deal. The town had a fund called the Morristown Development Fund that was basically $500,000 that you could present them with a business plan and they would lend you money to promote the economy in the town. So they lent me $125,000 and I took that money and put it into fixing up the building because it was a hardware store for many years. There was a whole 3,000 square feet on the second floor that was residential back in like the 30s. And I actually found a letter in the wall from like 1918, which was pretty cool.
Oh, wow. That's cool.
When we were renovating it. But so I put the money in that I got from the development fund plus some of my own money into renovating that, turning it into office space, found tenants for the office space, found another tenant for the downstairs. And, you know, things were going pretty well. And I did a lot of the work myself. I you know, a lot of it's just grunt work. I'm not a contractor. I don't pretend to be one. But you can hire a plumber. You can hire an electrician to do the kind of the skilled labor. But, you know, if you got to take a wall out or, you know, smash something, like that's easy. You can do that. So I did a lot of that myself. And then this past summer, I had a gentleman approach me. He owned a business in town and he wanted to rent from me. But I had already... I was waiting on another tenant that was going to rent the whole first floor, which is about 5,500 square feet. And I said, I can't rent you half the space because I've already promised the full space to somebody else. He was working on financing. And the guy said, well, would you sell the building? And I was like, well, I wasn't really planning on it. And at the time, that money I was going to make from that commercial property was going to be my income to replace hockey because I wasn't going to be playing hockey anymore. So I looked at it and I was like, well, you know, I would consider selling. And he's like, well, how much would you want? And I told him and he said, yeah, I can do that. And we made a deal and it worked off. So it was, you know, it was lucky. And, you know, I ended up selling the building to him and getting all my capital back that I invested and paying off the loans. Then I got, you know, a decent chunk of change to invest. But then I had this problem, like, I need income. I can't just live off of this sale because it's going to disappear. It's going to be gone. So that's when I was like, this is my opportunity to really put to use what I've been learning over the past 12 months, you know, through books and Bigger Pockets and things. And I started looking for owner financing deals that I could get with like 10% down and buying these properties and putting tenants in them. And that's kind of what I did for 8 months and things just slowed down. I just rented the last unit on February 1st. And now I'm trying to refinance everything to get some more money to do it again. So that's kind of where I was at. And the commercial property was, you know, was the best thing I ever bought. And it was kind of a unintentional commercial flip, fix and flip. I didn't mean to do it, but it worked out that way. And, you know, that's part of real estate. You just being dynamic and rolling with the punches when something happens or goes one way, you know, just kind of figure out a way you can benefit from it and do that.
That's cool. That's what. Do you mind me asking how much you made on that? You don't have to say it. You don't have to say it.
Yeah, no, I made, it was over six figures that I made on the property.
That's great.
So for holding it for 2 years and, you know, it worked out really well. And I spent all of that money on buying other stuff. So
that's what we do.
You're crazy. But I was like, we need the income. We need it.
That's funny.
You know?
Yeah.
Well, so, like, yeah, isn't that what Grant Cardone said? He said whenever he makes money, right, he just pours it back into real estate and he's always broke. Like, because what good does it do sitting in your bank account? Nothing.
Right.
Yeah. So
no, and that Grant Cardone show was great.
That was a great show.
Yeah, that was a good show. Sure.
All right, cool. Well, hey, let's move on to the fire round.
It's time for the fire round.
All right, the world famous fire round. These questions come direct out of the Bigger Pockets forums, which people can get to and engage on at biggerpockets.com/forums. So question number one, when contacting a seller, especially about seller financing, I'll add that part in there. But when contacting a seller, what information do you request from them?
Well, how much they want for the building, how much they're looking to get, what the gross rents are, and what their annual expenses are. Those are the three most important things that I look at. And you've obviously got to verify all that information. But I'm at the point where if I know how much they want and I know how much they're getting for rent, I don't even really need to know what their expenses are. I'm just really trying to gauge their honesty or their, you know, how much they know about their building or how well managed it is. Cause you know, you use like the 50% rule or the 60%, you know, it's more like 60 where I'm at.
Yeah.
and then I can gain a value for the building and if it was if it's something I want to pursue or not. So those are my first kind of questions, and then I get, you know, I don't come out and say right away like, will you own or finance it for me? Because it's, you know, again, you gotta build a relationship before you can really do that.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. You just mentioned the 50% rule.
I was going to go there. That's really funny.
Oh, well, I was going to say, so people who don't know what it is, it means that on average, it's a rule of thumb, not a rule, but it's a rule of thumb that on average, half of your income goes out to expenses, not counting the mortgage. And so, you know, if you had $1,000 a month rent, you could expect $500 just to leave in expenses. Then you pay your mortgage and whatever's left might be your cash flow. Anyway, I thought it was funny. I just did my taxes last night. I spent the whole day yesterday doing them. My expenses came to 51%. Like not counting the more, I mean, it was almost exactly 50% rule last year, which is crazy to think like how close that rule of thumb was for me. So,
but that's a BS rule of thumb, Brandon. I mean, 50%.
And it's different.
That's crazy.
Well, like you said, 60% for you, right?
So, well, I'm again being facetious here, but
it changes.
Experienced people, you know, prove that over the long term, the quote unquote rule, it's not a rule, it's a rule of thumb, but you know, it's a good way to estimate this thing, is going to be between 50 and 60%. And it really does tend to hold true. And you know, for those people, you know, don't use it as a means to buy a property, but you can definitely use it as a means to filter out some information and help you speed up, you know, the kind of calculation in your brain.
Oh, yep. For sure. I mean, it's a quick way in 3 seconds to tell, you know, this person's way out of off base with what their property is worth and if it's something you can pursue or not. And that was one of the first things I learned on Bigger Pockets. I'd never heard of the 50% rule. And I was like, what? That's ludicrous. There's no way it's 50%. And then sure enough, like as I've grown and gotten bigger and you might be able to, with one property, you might be able to massage it a little bit, but it's pretty close. I mean, it really is.
The massaging comes from like, hey, I'm not accounting for management. Hey, right. I didn't have to do any repairs this year. Hey, I didn't have any vacancies this year. But you know what? If you hold that building for 5, 10, 20, 30 years, you're going to have all the above. And you have to account for it, period. Right. And it's just, I mean, to not do that is silly, which is why we built these calculators at biggerpockets.com/calc. I mean, these tools, we've actually had some people say, well, it's not fair to give calculators to people who don't know how to use them. In fact, I think that's your good friend, Ben Leibovich. Yeah.
You know, Ben Leibovich coming at you. I love Ben.
That's like, that's good.
I don't know him, but
to me, it's silliness because you know what? I mean, the tools help you learn. That's the beauty of these things. You know, like running through these things, you actually learn, you know, that there are more expenses. You learn what they are if you didn't know what they were before, and you learn how to kind of account for them. And so if you haven't checked out the calculators, definitely go to biggerpockets.com/calc, C-A-L-C. And, you know, we recommend testing them out.
So there you go.
That's what I got. All right.
All right. Next question.
Fire round. What are the pros and cons?
That was the longest fire round question we've ever done, by the way.
Well, we just kind of go.
I blame Graham.
I digress.
All right.
What are the pros and cons of single family houses, SFHs versus the MFHs, the multifamilies, singles versus multis?
In my experience, single families are a lot easier to rent. People want to live in a house, not more so than an apartment, I feel like, in my area. There's less problems. You can pass more expenses onto the tenants in single families. It doesn't really make sense to just buy singles up here, but I've found from renting singles that those are the advantages. For multifamilies, you've got, you know, one roof, you got multiple tenants. You know, so if someone moves out, your vacancy hit, you know, is a lot softer. You only have one roof. You generally have one heating system. You got, you know, one foundation. You got one driveway. You got one garbage. Economies of scale. If there's a problem, you're driving to one place. And if you have, you know, three problems, they could all, you know, they're all there if you've got 12 units. But if you got 12 single families and you got three problems, you could be driving all over town. So I like multis. I'm not even a big duplex fan. I find I need 3+ units to really get the numbers where I want them to be.
Yeah. And that is a big, you know, you said like you started that whole entire answer with in my area, you know, whatever, like it depends on your area. Some people might have great single family houses. Some might have great duplexes. Some might have triplexes, fourplexes, 50-plexes, who knows? So yeah, very cool. All right. I love that answer, by the way. Number three, this is very closely related.
Similar.
Huh? It's very closely, but I'm going to actually change it. For my very first investment, Should I consider a single or multi?
I think the best thing for most people is to find a four-unit property where you're going to live in one of the units and buy it with an FHA loan. I think that's kind of the – I mean, my brother did that a couple of years ago, and he's really glad that he did. And I think that's the cheapest you're going to get in something. I think – you know, yeah, you're going to be jumping headfirst into being a property manager over three units, but you know, you can learn that stuff if you're willing to. But if I was looking to get started in real estate investing, if I had to start all over, I would go buy a four unit property and live in one of the units, and I'd use an FHA loan to do it. And I'd do that four times. And then you got 16 units, you got your four loans. It's going to take you, five, six, 7 years to do it, but then you're going to know a lot and you're going to be pretty well established. And I think that's a great way to do it.
Yeah, that's you're wrong.
In my area.
No, I'm just kidding.
I love that.
In my area.
Yeah, it's a great idea, man.
I think asterisk. Idea.
Yeah, yeah. All right. What would be your first steps to make a home green? We haven't really talked about green homes in a long time.
No, I live in a green home, actually.
Do
I've
you?
Got a, yeah,
not like physically, I, right? Like you didn't paint it green?
No, it's gray.
Okay.
But it's highly energy efficient. It's got a HERS score of 26. I don't know if that people that know green building know what HERS score is.
I have no idea what that is.
It uses 26% of the energy that a normal house built today would use. That's what it uses. But if you want to get into green building, if you want to build green, you got to focus on insulation. That's insulation and air leakage is where the money's at with green building. And you know, we could have a whole show about green building, and you guys should.
We probably should do a whole show
about green building. There's a lot of very knowledgeable people about it, and there's a lot of good information about it. But my house is, I've got foot thick walls, and it's very energy efficient, and my utility bills are very low for up here.
How big is your house? How many square feet?
3,000.
3,000. You're in Vermont. What's like your utility bill for a 3,000 square foot greenhouse?
I've got only electric. Here, I don't have any propane or oil, which most people do up here. We don't have natural gas because we're too rural. But my electric bills are under $200 a month on average for the whole year. And that's
you guys have utilities. It cold up there. It's chilly.
Yeah, well, I've got a 3,000 square foot, three unit building, and I spend $4,800 a year heating that with oil. So yeah. I'm saving $5,000 a year by having a greenhouse versus not a greenhouse. And I like the way that most of the green industry thinks and their thought process, but I didn't do it to save trees or to save the environment as much as I did it from a numbers standpoint to save money. And I wanted to live in this house for a long time, and I wanted to be comfortable, and it made financial sense for me to spend more on the building to save money on my variable costs, or year to year are so much lower than everybody else's.
Yeah, makes sense. And for a hobby, of course, you like to cut down trees, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Who doesn't? Who doesn't? I mean, if you're in a bad, you're having a bad day, go get a chainsaw if you know what you're doing, and cut a tree down, and you will feel much better.
It's funny because that's actually what people in my area do. Like, I live in the wilderness, right? Like we live in the. I mean, I am in the lumber industry out here.
The spotted owl.
Yeah,
man.
They would not allow kids to watch Ferngully. Remember Ferngully? They banned it my whole entire county back when it came out back in whatever the 90s because it was about how evil the loggers were, and so we're not allowed to talk about Ferngully here.
But we chop down trees. running chainsaws is fun. I wouldn't want to do it for a living, but it's fun to do every once in a while.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got a bunch of friends who do it. That's what they do for a job. They go out in the woods with a chainsaw and cut down trees. So, all right, moving on. All right. Let's go over to our world famous.
Famous for.
All right. These questions are asked to every single guest. And I know you've heard our show before, so you probably know what's coming. But let's go with number one. What is your favorite real estate related book?
I have two. Is that cheating if I tell you two?
That's all good.
It's okay.
I know other people have broken the rules before, but for...
And they're never invited back.
Okay. Well, then I'm not end up changing my answer. From Property Management and Landlording, Landlording on Autopilot by Mark Butler is invaluable if you're going to be managing tenants. And I love that book, and I learned about it on Bigger Pockets initially, and I got it, and it helped me tremendously. So that's one. But if you from an investing standpoint, especially if you're a beginner, I like the book on investing in real estate with no and low money down by Brandon Turner.
First time, I think.
Yeah. Well, it's, you know, there's got to be a first time for everything. But from a real estate investing, you know, first of all, like you guys say in the book, everything that's in that book, you can find on Bigger Pockets. But it's going to take you months and months and months on Bigger Pockets to find all that information. It's not going to be organized or laid out as straightforward as this book is. So if you're seriously interested in getting started, or if you've been doing it for a while and you want a great resource, like, that book is great to do that. So I like your book, Brandon, and it was very well done. And, you know, I look back on it and I'm like, what did Brandon say about, you know, this loan, and can I get this loan? And I have people like my sister-in-law, she's younger, she wants to get into investing. And I tell her, like, get this book, like, read it. You know, here are the loans that Brandon says you can get, and it really, it's a great book. So I recommend that. So I've recommended it to 4 or 5 people just in the last month.
That's awesome.
I love it.
You know, I think the best part of that book is the foreword.
The foreword, yeah. Good job, Josh. Josh wrote a great foreword on that book. All right, so we've never done this before, but I'm going to do it right now, and Josh can edit this out if he doesn't like it later. But we're going to have a sale in the book right now. It's going to be the keyword. If you want to buy the book, you get 20% off by using the coupon code Graham. Graham. Is that how you spell your name?
How long is that sale good for, Brandon?
Well, I don't know. What do we go? 2 weeks? I'll give people time to listen. And so when this comes out, the 2 weeks following, use the discount code. How do you spell your name?
Graham.
All right. 2 weeks after this, you can get 20% off if you want to buy the book on Bigger Pockets at biggerpockets.com.
And I'm not getting any of the proceeds.
You're not.
The sale book. I wasn't prompted to answer that question.
And Brandon decided that he wanted 20% less of a cut on the sale of these books. So
I want everybody to read this thing. I want every person in America to have this book on their shelf. All right.
I'm just kidding.
Thank you.
Moving on. I think it's my turn. Can I speak?
Hey, Graham, what's your favorite business book?
You son of a... Hey, Graham, what is your favorite business book?
That's a really good question. I'm glad you asked me that.
Yes.
Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill really was a great book. And yes, I love it because it works. I mean, it really does. It's not an easy read. I mean, it's written in the 30s, but... It really has helped, and it cemented a lot of the things that were kind of, again, in the back of my head, like, is this really working? Or, you know, but if you set your mind on something and you want to accomplish it, you know, and this, which is what I kind of feel the book is saying, you know, if you internalize that and you think about it subconsciously, you're going to attract things to you that are going to reflect what you're thinking about. And it's an amazing book. It works in all aspects of life, not just real estate investing but any business. I saw it firsthand in the hockey world. It's a great book. And honestly, again, I learned about it on Bigger Pockets. It's the first book that I read that was recommended by a Bigger Pockets forum member. And I love it. And then it works. I mean, I get calls and I'm just like, man, I was just thinking about that last week. And it's strange. It's eerily strange how it works, but it's cool.
That's great. All right, man. What do you do for fun? What kind of hobbies you got besides hockey? Snooze fest.
I always struggle with this answer because when I hear other people on the podcast, they've got like these great, like, oh, I go cliff jumping.
Didn't we have a guy who like hikes across?
I hike the Andes. I don't have any time to do anything. Josh, you can back me up in this. I got a 3-year-old and a 5-year-old. It's all I can do to do what I need to do with real estate and spend time with them. I really don't have any real hobbies. I mean, I still play hockey twice a week with my men's league team. And so that's pretty much my social time. Other than that, it's full-time real estate and kids. So I'm looking forward to the day where I'll have a little bit more time, but I'm really trying to enjoy my family while they're young and spend as much time as I can with them. And real estate enables me to have a more flexible schedule to spend time with them. But I get so jealous of Brandon when he's... He's talking about how much of a responsibility of his cats are, and it's like...
Hey, it's tough to look after them. I got to change the litter box once a day. I mean, come on.
I know. I mean, I wish I could leave my kids for like a weekend and pour like some Cheerios on the counter and be like, okay, I'll be back in 3 days. So your mom and I will see you. We love you. You know.
By the way, for any of the authorities listening, Graham lives at...
All right. Moving on. Final question from me. What do you believe...
sets apart successful real estate investors from those who give up, fail, or never get started?
I thought a lot about this. Self-confidence is what separates, I think, the people that succeed that don't. And this comes from my past as a hockey player, but a lot of people think it's motivation. You hear a lot of, they got to be motivated. And I think that's true, but I think motivation is a combination of two things. It's a combination of desire and then self-confidence. And a lot of people have the desire. They want to do it and they never get started. You know, they think they're motivated, but they're not really motivated. They just have a lot of desire. So what's holding them back, in my opinion, is they don't have the self-confidence to take action, to take the next step. I think that's where like analysis paralysis comes from a little bit. You're constantly learning and you desire and you want that thing to happen, but you just don't feel like you're ready to do it, or you don't think you deserve it, or you're not confident that you're going to be successful. And so I think if you find that you feel like you're motivated and you want to achieve, but you're not, I think you're really experiencing desire with a lack of self-confidence. So you just need to believe in yourself and go out and start to make things happen, because they will happen. And, you know, I think so the lack of self-confidence, I think that's what paralyzes most people and what makes people like not do it. They just don't believe that they're good enough. And like I said, this is true in real estate, but it's true in the sports world as well. There's a lot of really good athletes that never make it because they just don't believe that they can make it. And there's a lot of athletes that make it because they fake it till they make it. You know, they think they're the best and they act like they're the best, and eventually it happens. So it kind of goes in with that, you know, the book, Think and Grow Rich. But, you know, if you find yourself in that situation, build your self-confidence, you know, little steps, like find ways to, you know, have little victories, and it'll add up to a bigger victory, and you'll get that feeling like you can do it, and then you'll go out and you'll do it.
You know, that was probably one of my favorite answers I've ever heard on the podcast. Like, I don't know if I've ever said the self-confidence before, but I think that is so important. I mean, people listening to this should like rewind that last like minute and listen again, because I think that was huge. I love that.
There you go. Michael Jordan once said, I'm good enough, I'm smart enough, and gosh darn it, people like me.
Wasn't that
Smiley?
Yeah, Neil Frankel or whatever. No, what's that? Al Franken. That's his name.
It was Michael Jordan on SNL.
Oh, yeah, on SNL.
With Stuart Smalley, yes.
Wasn't someone on this podcast on Saturday Night Live?
All right, moving on. Graham, where can people find out more information about you?
Bigger Pockets, you know, from a real estate perspective, I'm on Twitter, but I'm not super active with that. It's a lot of sports stuff. It was kind of developed from a hockey standpoint. I'm going to be switching over to more real estate stuff if I get time. I'm on LinkedIn.
He's on Wikipedia.
Clearly.
Yeah, but Bigger Pockets is my chosen forum. I mean, that's if you want to talk to me about anything, if you're looking, you have questions, if you want to invest in Vermont, you know, anywhere, look me up. You'll find me there.
And also be sure to look him up on YouTube, where you can see the best of Graham Mink smacking people across the head.
I played 800 professional hockey league games, and there's like four fights on there. So, and they're not very good ones. So don't
waste
your time.
And that's the only video that exists of you.
Yeah.
Here's a video of Graham on the ice. Another video of Graham getting knocked on the ice.
There's one particular video where the announcer it's just brutal on me, and there's a little history between me and the announcer, and we didn't get along very well. So take whatever he says with a grain of salt.
I gotta watch it now. All right, Graham, listen, man, it's been an absolute pleasure, a lot of fun, really, really enjoyed doing the show with you, and we thank you for coming on, and of course thank you for being such a big fan of ours, and thanks for participating and being a part of the Bigger Pockets family. We will look forward to seeing you around.
And anyone listening, you can check out the show notes at biggerpockets.com/show119.
Thanks, guys.
You're welcome, guys. Thank you very much for having me. And I look forward to meeting you guys in person at the 2015 Bigger Pockets Summit.
Yes, he said it. Now it has to happen, Josh. We're going to have a petition. We're going to start one. Change.org. It's going to be a...
Do it. Do what you got to do.
All right, I want to see somebody do that. All right, we're getting out of here. Josh,
thanks, guys. It's been great. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Hey, thank you, Graham.
No, seriously, thanks, man. It was definitely. Are we still recording?
Sure. Why don't you take us out right now? We will do the intro.
Do you want me to, should I do all the way through?
Yeah,
I just stop. Well, let's go back then and let's fix it.
We got this. We got this.
Nah, this is terrible.
This is good. This is good. People like this stuff right here.
Nobody likes you.
This is what the podcast is like when we don't hit the edit button.
Oh, stop. Graham, right. No, I got my agent like texting me. I got to go look at a property. So I'm going to get out of here. Graham, it's been a pleasure. Everybody listening, I'm Josh Dorkening. I'm not signing out yet, but check out biggerpockets.com if you've not already done that. If you've not yet written us a rating or review on iTunes, please go to iTunes and leave us a rating and review. We really, really appreciate that. It helps us a lot. It helps us expand our viewership, our listenership. And thanks a million, guys. Thanks for being a part of our world. And thanks for being out there helping to improve our communities, our neighborhoods, fixing up properties, giving people a good place to live. We are changing lives. We are helping people out. That's what real estate investors do. And it's a beautiful thing. And we don't talk about it enough. So I'm going to just spit it out here. Anyway, I'm out. Josh Dorkin, signing off.
You're listening to Bigger Pockets Radio, simplifying real estate for investors large and small. If you're here looking to learn about real estate investing without all the hype, you're in the right place. Be sure to join the millions of others who have benefited from BiggerPockets.com, your home for real estate investing online.
There's a reason small multifamily investing is so popular in the Bigger Pockets community. With just a 3.5% down payment, you can own up to 4 different units. Think about it. If you house hack and live in one of the units, you still have 3 different groups of tenants helping you pay down your mortgage every month, 4 kitchens and bathrooms you could renovate to increase your property value, 4 different Airbnbs, medium-term rentals, or other rental strategies that you can try in one property, all in just one transaction. Of course, the question is, where do you find a small multifamily property that you can actually afford? Which market and which deals are best for you? Once you close, how do you manage it, optimize it, keep scaling, and living your life without being tied down to 4 leaky toilets or 4 fussy tenants? All great questions, my friends. All to be answered in the upcoming Small Multifamily Bootcamp with Chris Lopez and Leka Devatha. So if you're serious about growing your portfolio with this highly efficient strategy, head to biggerpockets.com/4, F-O-U-R, today and join us in the Small Multifamily Bootcamp. See you there.
The content of this podcast is for informational purposes only.
Past performance is not indicative of future results, and all hosts and participant opinions are their own.
Investment in any asset, real estate included, involves risk. Use your best judgment and consult with qualified advisors before investing. Only risk capital you can afford to lose.
Bigger Pockets LLC disclaims all liability for direct, indirect, consequential, or other damages arising from reliance upon information presented in this podcast.